Attention all personnel. You got it. You got it. You found the most listened to radio station. Jackalope Radio.
When the strange becomes reality, when the light becomes dark, when you open your eyes and the monsters are still there, that's when you want your family. Welcome to the safest place in the paranormal world, TAPS Family Radio. They're the family you always wish you had. Your hosts tonight are Tim Ellis of the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society of Michigan and Chris Perkins of the Atlantic Paranormal Society, interviewing the biggest names and tackling the subjects you want to hear about only on Jackalope Radio. They're not your average family, but I guess that's what makes them fun. Here is Chris and Tim.
And welcome back to TAPS Family Radio, Deja Vu. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are excited to be back for another edition of TFR. My name is Tim Ellis, and along with me, co-host Chris Perkins. Good evening, Chris.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing good. I swear we just said all this before.
It feels familiar.
Doesn't it? Yes, and rule number one of radio, never tell inside jokes to the listeners, so we're going to let you in on what we're talking about. We thought we were connected with our producer, the greatest producer in the world, Cormac, and we weren't. We had accidentally dropped him from the call, so we're sitting here blabbing and doing our intro, and before you know it, Cormac's like, hey guys, where are you? So we're back.
Yeah. We mean it this time, too.
We do. Yeah, this time we're serious. It is great to be back for another great edition here of TAPS Family Radio on our new home, Jackalope Radio. I guess we could probably stop saying new home shortly. It's been a few weeks now since we've been with them. We're so excited to be here at Jackalope Radio, and we thank everyone who has tuned in and listening or at least downloading the podcast and hanging out with us there. You can also join us live in our chat room, TAPSFamilyRadio.net. That's TAPSFamilyRadio.net. If you go into there and you click on chat, you will find us in the chat room. And it's a great way to be able to ask questions for either our TAPS Family Spotlight that we'll be doing this hour or next hour when we bring in our guests. And excuse that. Let me just mute that real quick.
And I hear nothing. I hear nothing.
You heard nothing?
No. Perfect.
That's what I like to hear. But anyway, so here we are getting ready. Chris, how have things been? We haven't had a chance to chat in a while since you have been we missed a show 2 weeks ago. We didn't have our live show. How are you?
You know, it's the end of school year. I'm just making it. Minute by minute, I'm just trying to get by. We have 7 school days left. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. I can almost really, you know, believe it's there. But wow, it's exhausting. You would think the end of the school year is easier. No.
Yeah, I think I see exactly what you mean, because you know you've it's one thing when you're knee deep, neck deep into the whole year, but when you're that close, I think time just slows down for you, doesn't it?
It does, and you run out of curriculum, and you know the kids are done; they're already on vacation.
Oh yeah, they've checked out, and I think that's why do you guys, is there, and again, I don't know if in your part of the U.S. you had this as a kid growing up, but I know here, did you guys have like field day and all that stuff?
It's called Super Kids Day now, and
Super Kids Day. Super it just Kids sounds day. More exciting.
Isn't that more exciting?
It's and super
ice cream on that day, nice. And you know it's wild because now you know every year they plan Super Kids Day, and the weatherman must have some inside info on that, because that's the day that the storms are suddenly predicted, and we have to move everything around at the last minute. But
yeah, now does Super Kids Day involve like contests and tug of war or anything like that?
Oh yeah, the balloon toss and the all that stuff.
Yeah, to this day, and I'm not afraid to say my age. And to this day, I mean, I was in fifth grade. What are fifth graders these days, age-wise? I don't even remember.
You know, I have a fifth grader of my own, my very own pet fifth grader. He's 11, yeah. So they're 10 or 11. Yeah.
Okay. So say, 28 years ago, I got hit in the head with this softball on Special Kids Day. And to this day, I still have a welt. So I remember this time of year of school fondly.
Well, I tell you, you know, first of all, I have to say that there are some people out there, me not included, who would say that softball hit to the head may explain some things. Not me.
Maybe. That's true. I never looked at it that way. Thanks.
You
Chris.
Know? But
I want you charged by the hour for your helping me with my mental issues here. I appreciate it.
There'll be a bill coming. Don't worry about it.
All right. All right. So anyways, yeah, here we are back with TFR, and we're excited to be back for another live show. We have got a great show lined up for you today, by the way. And we are going to be talking an issue that is not so much ghosts later tonight, but still part of the supernatural and out of this world, if you will. We're going to be talking UFOs tonight with some folks from MUFON. We're really excited about that. Before we start with that, Chris, let's do a fun part of the show here, which is strange news, where we just kind of take a look at some of the crazy stuff going out there in a very crazy world. What do we got? What do you want to kick us off with tonight?
Well, you know, this isn't so much strange. It's kind of scary to me. There is a big push for artificial intelligence to create an artificial brain. And, you know, I know there's been talk about it, and surely, you know, there's been science fiction movies are often just built around that. But there's actually a push to do it now. It's called the Human Brain Project. And, you know, I may be the last person to find out about this. I don't know. But when I read it, I was just really surprised. And they're actually saying within the next 10 years, it should be complete. they're talking about a fully functional human brain that is being engineered to be indistinguishable from, you know, a brain we're born with and how it operates. And I don't know, is this not frightening? Because here's my thought. If it's a human brain, then what if it builds itself a body? You know, what if it can? Mm-hmm. And then where do we go from there? It's just frightening. This group that's doing this is in Germany. And like I said, you know, they're thinking that within the next 10 years, you know, there's a whole bunch of ethics questions involved there. About building this artificial brain and the use and what would be the point.
Right. And by artificial brain, I mean, we've heard that term for years now, but it's just been used as basically another name for a computer memory. But this is beyond that. You're talking an actual human brain.
We're talking an actual human wow. brain. And they're saying that it would blur the line between consciousness and real life. As how it will process information exactly how a human would. Mm-hmm. And so that not only will we be able to do things with it, but learn from it as far as how we think and how our brains work. It's said to be able to achieve a comparable level of intelligence as a human brain.
Well, I mean, and where else do we think those are going to end up going after a while? They're going to end up being put into, you know, man-made beings, whether right. it be, you know, I mean, I just, you're right. I see the worst sci-fi film coming together here. And this is just freaky when you think about it.
It's coming into reality. Oh, wow.
And speaking of which, going along those lines of science, just getting, you know, is it going too far? Maybe. The folks over in the UK, and this might hit home for our producer, Cormac, have come up with a blood test now, DNA breakthrough. And here's what they've figured out. And has it opened up Pandora's box? Scientists in the UK have found that a blood test that they can do now can show how fast someone is aging and offers the possibility of estimating how long they have left to live.
Oh, now that's assuming they die of natural causes. And
Well, sure. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's not predicting how you're going to die or, you know, yeah, you're right. Do you get in a car accident the next day? That's right. Going to totally blow this out of the water. But I don't even know that I would want to know this. I don't want to know how fast my body's aging. You know,
no.
I don't want to have any idea of what's going on with this. And they even say this is something that life insurance agencies could end up picking up on and then, you know, skewing or not picking you up because they say the blood test shows that, you know, your body's aging too fast. I mean, this just could, again, open up a Pandora's box that I don't think we need.
I don't think so either. And, you know, even, you know, with all the talk about reforming medical care and everything, and, you know, there's a certain segment who are saying that, you know, with healthcare reform, they're going to determine if you are physically viable enough for certain medical procedures. Well, you know, if you're seeking medical treatment, they could use that blood test to say, well, hey, look, you're really only going to be around here another couple of years anyway. Maybe we're not going to waste our time on this. And
yeah,
Think
being the family members of the person who's getting this news. I mean, yeah, this is just somewhere I don't think we need to be going.
You know, and I just don't want to know. Surprise me. I don't want to know when that day is for me. And like you said, you know, I don't want to know how fast I'm aging. I'm perfectly happy living under the delusion that I'm not aging. So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what I keep telling myself. I'm no older than I was when I got hit in the head with the softball. You know, I'm still 10 years old running around. So I don't know. Scary stuff. Scary stuff.
I agree.
Anything else on your end with strange news?
Well, you know, it's interesting. One thing leads to another. Stephen Hawking, who is somebody I very much respect for his level of intelligence, his brain is real, not manufactured, has declared that there is no heaven.
I heard about this.
Yeah. And, you know, he comes out now and then with some pretty controversial stuff anyway. But some of the things that he said, you know, like he made the statement that when we die, our brains just shut down and they're nothing. They're like a broken computer. They just, you know, fizz out. And, you know, he says that it's even that death, according to him, is more of a drag than we thought. No pearly gates, no rebirth, no playing harps. And that the stuff that just happens that we hear about after death is all just fairy tales.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty big bold statement to make, unless he's actually been there and can say, yeah, there's nothing out there, kids. How do you solidly make that prediction?
He just says it does not make sense in his science. And, you know, you and I have talked about this before, and we've talked about it with multiple guests, that, you know, science and metaphysics and all of that are going to reach a point where they can't ignore each other anymore. But for right now, it does appear that, you know, most scientists and even these theoretical physicists and stuff are still having a hard time putting the two together. They're finding them mutually exclusive. And I liked one of the statements I read, one of the rebuttals about what he was saying, and I don't have it in front of me. I'd have to look to see who it was that said it. But they said, you know, just because your scientific model says that God, you know, didn't create the universe doesn't mean that he isn't there. Mm-hmm. That he wasn't necessary, I think is what it said, or that he, you know, wasn't there. So, you know, it definitely stirred up some conversation. It's kind of interesting to hear, but very bold. Yeah, very bold to say.
And very bold. But I'll tell you what, we may not have that far to wait, because as you may have heard by now, and this is my final strange news story of the day, the world's ending Saturday anyway.
Oh, man, I got stuff to do Sunday.
I know. So you either don't worry about them or move them up. I've got a buddy who's celebrating his 40th birthday on Saturday. I told him the other day, I said, dude, we either have to move it up to early Saturday so we're nice and, you know, buzzed up when the earthquakes start, or let's just do it up Friday and then we'll just be feeling like crap anyway when the earthquakes start. Because apparently, according to Harold Camping, the earth is going to end this Saturday just before 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And he is so confident in his prediction. He's from New York City. He has spent his life savings on billboards, bus boards, and train advertising. Anywhere in New York City where you see where you're waiting for public transportation, he has ads up telling people that this Saturday is it. And he's claiming that it's going to be by earthquakes, devastating earthquakes. And he says it's from the Bible code. He found this in a Bible code is what he is quoting. And he is guaranteeing that it's going to happen Saturday just before 6 p.m. Eastern time.
Okay, there's a sick little twisted side of me that thinks it would be great to put that guy in a room with Stephen Hawking and just let him go. Let's just hear what they say.
Exactly. Now, apparently, Harold Camping wrote a book. So if he's an author, he must, you know what he's talking about, right? Because not everyone can just write a book these days, can they?
Is it commercial time?
Actually, it is. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are spanning the globe. We're going to be talking to our TAPS family team, SEIP, out of beautiful Argentina. That's going to be up next. You're listening to TAPS Family Radio on Jackalope Radio.
Attention all personnel. You got it. You got it. You found the most listened to radio station. Jackalope Radio.
Tired of wondering where to get the best ghost hunting gear at the best price? Wondering if you're being ripped off or if the product is high quality and can last the rugged life of a ghost hunter? Your fear and search is over. Creepy Hollow Gear is the home of ghost hunting gear made by ghost hunters for ghost hunters. Founded by Paul Bradford of Sci-Fi Channel's Ghost Hunters International, Paul wanted to create a place where all the equipment was proven and tested in the field. Some even built by Paul and his team, making Creepy Hollow Gear the only place you can get some of this equipment. Check them out for yourself at www.creepyhollowgear.com, where you'll find a place that is set up for teams and enthusiasts who aren't inclined to build their own equipment or kit. A site that has the top gear at prices a team on a budget can afford. A place where people can try new equipment and technology. That's www.creepyhollowgear.com. Ghost hunting gear made by ghost hunters for ghost hunters.
If you are in need of a professional, experienced, and confidential paranormal investigation at a home or commercial location, the International Paranormal Reporting Group is ready to talk with you. For more information about us and other services we offer, or to interact with team members and people just like you, visit us online at IPRGC.com. That's IPRGC.com. The International Paranormal Reporting Group.
And welcome back to Taps Family Radio. Tim Ellis, along with co-host Chris Perkins on this Tuesday evening, live on Jackalope Radio. And wherever you are, we hope the weather's beautiful for you. I know finally here in northern Michigan, we're just now getting our spring. It's been absolutely beautiful the last 2 days. So our April showers are happening in May. Everything beautiful. I got to believe it's getting nice and warm in your part of the world there, Chris.
You know, it should be, but it's strange. We're having fall weather. We've needed jackets, and I wore a sweater to work today. It's very strange. Yeah.
But I'll bet you it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. I'm just guessing, because I've never been there myself, where our Taps Family team for our Taps Family Spotlight segment is from tonight. And Chris, I'll let you introduce the team.
Okay. Well, yeah, I agree. I would love to visit this team on their home turf. Our team tonight is from Argentina. And, you know, I'm going to let him say the name. We call them SEIP, but, you know, we were kind of talking before the show how it sounds so much better in Spanish. So let's let him do that. Nicholas, are you with us?
Hi. Yes, I hear you very, very clear.
Good. Okay. Well, we're going to let you say the name of your team, if you wouldn't mind. It just sounds, you know, so much better. So how about you tell us, what is the name of your team?
The name is SEIP. Sociedad de Estudios e Investigaciones Paranormales.
Yeah.
That sounded awesome.
That sounds cool. I thought it's a beautiful language. I just can't speak it.
It is so beautiful.
Well, we're excited to have you tonight on the show. I believe, you know, you're one of our newer teams. So it's always interesting for me when we have a team from another country that wants to join the TAPS family. And it's also very exciting. We always want to expand, to be able to expand our network globally. And so when we had a team from Argentina apply, you know, we were very excited. Can you tell us a little bit about what attracted you to joining TAPS family, for one, and then we'll get into a little bit more about your team itself?
Okay. Our team was founded in 2009. And obviously, TAPS and the Ghost Hunter Show is on TV here from several years now. And being part of a great community like TAPS family is just great for us. It's a privilege.
Well, we appreciate having you among our ranks of teams. And like I said, it was very exciting for us. Now, if I was looking over your website, and at one point I had translated it through a translator. Are you actually the first team of your type in Argentina?
Yes, we are. We are the first team here in Argentina. And talking about the TAPS family, we are the second group in South America.
Exciting. Wow. That's awesome. Well, now, since your team has formed, have other teams kind of come around and maybe following in your footsteps, or are you still pretty much it?
Sorry?
Is your team still the only team in Argentina, or have other teams kind of copied what you're doing and formed their own teams in your area? Are you still the only team there?
No. This year, another group was formed here in Buenos Aires. So we are now two teams here in Buenos Aires.
Well, that's exciting.
Now, Christopher, let me ask you real quick. And now, with another team coming in, how is that being perceived by you and your team? Is this something you're excited about? Are you embracing them, going to help them, show them the ropes, and, you know, kind of work together and network more?
Yes, totally. We are trying to form a huge network here in our country. We are contacting people at the center of Argentina. Argentina is a very big country, you know. And for example, we went to investigate to Ushuaia, the city. More at south of the continent, so we are trying to establish a network here of investigators.
And how is the whole, you know, paranormal investigation, ghost hunting thing accepted in Argentina? Is it a very traditionally superstitious country? Is there a lot of old world superstitious traditions attached to Argentina? So are they very open to what you do and to what the show Ghost Hunters is about, or are you finding people are a little closed off to it?
No, the people here are very skeptic because several years ago there was a lot of people who claim to be medium or something like that. No? The scientific approach of the investigation, the TAPS style, it's a new thing here in Argentina. So we are proud to be the first group to do a scientific approach of the investigation.
One thing I thought was interesting, and I always find this interesting when I look at websites from teams in other countries, is how similar, you know, your methods are. And a lot of that is, I guess, due to, you know, where we first gain our information. But even the gear and the equipment that you're using was very similar to what the stateside teams use. I'm sorry?
There is an explanation for that. The show Ghost Hunters was very inspiring for us, for all over the world. But the equipment is not for sale here in Argentina. Mm-hmm. And we buy the equipment, the EMF meters, the EVP recorders, and full spectrum cameras. We buy it in the States and bring it to Argentina.
Well, you know, I'm looking through what you have, and it just looks like you've really made some smart choices, in my opinion. You know, people equip their teams in different ways, but you've already found Gary Galka, who created the MEL meters and the RT-EVPs, and the guy just has a great line of equipment, and I noticed that you're using some of his products, and you know, I believe you were using the full spectrum cameras and a lot of the similar stuff. Now, one of the questions I did have for you when I looked at the RT-EVP that you have, that when you're recording EVP, we are asked a lot if we catch EVP in other languages here. Of course, you know, in the United States, we don't just have all English-speaking people. There are people that speak all kinds of languages, and so we're asked, well, how come all of your EVP are in English? And so, obviously, you know, you're not in an English-speaking country. Are the EVP that you're catching all generally Spanish? Do you catch any EVP that are in other languages? Or what are you finding?
Our EVPs that we catch, all of it are in Spanish. No, we didn't catch any English EVP.
That's interesting. You know, I've caught one EVP that I believe was Spanish that I'll have to run by you sometime and see what you think it's saying. But, you know, people ask that all the time. And, you know, we're asked how come when teams go to other countries, why don't they speak to them in, you know, whatever the native language is to try to get more EVP. And it's just interesting to me to consider, you know, what, you know, after we pass on and wherever we go, do we still retain the language that we're speaking here? And so it's interesting to me to hear that you're getting all Spanish EVP.
It's a very, very good shop the one of Ghost Hunter International. They do the EVP sessions in Spanish and in English, of course, in French, in German, one time. It's very interesting. Here, the group, my group, never catch an EVP in English. Always in Spanish.
Pretty interesting. Now, when you, I know that, you know, we have general guidelines that we use when we're conducting investigations, and you mentioned that, you know, you got a lot of your inspiration from the TV show Ghost Hunters, but culturally there, it's so different from where I live and where Tim lives. I was wondering how your team approaches an investigation as far as spiritually. I'm asked a lot of times what kind of protection do I use for my team spiritually and things like that. And it seems like maybe your area is a little bit more culturally, I don't know what I'm trying to say, aware of that. Does your team do anything as far as like a spiritual protection, or what do you do in regards to that sort of thing when you go on investigations?
Oh, nothing special. Some members of the group do a prayer before the investigation, but in my case, nothing special. My wife, Eugenia, she's the co-founder of the group. She's a very, very, very more spiritual people than I. She's making a very big study of the content of the EVPs regarding the other world.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Nicholas, how large is your team in Argentina? How many members do you have?
We have a team of five investigators and maybe, let me count, we have two specialists in pictures, in photograph, and a case manager, they are three, and you can consider as a producer, one girl who's who's in charge of the transportation and all the logistics of the investigation.
Did you find it hard?
Sorry.
I'm sorry, Nicholas.
You have to think one investigation, for example, not in the capital of Buenos Aires, in the province of Buenos Aires, is maybe 300 kilometers from where we are. It's very complicated, the logistics.
Right, you have such a big country, and with so few investigators, teams in there. Exactly. Now, when you and your wife started the team together, when you came up with that idea, did you have trouble getting people to want to do this with you? How did you reach out? Did you use the internet? How did you start the first team in Argentina?
Well, Facebook was a huge tool to recruit people. You have to think that the paranormal is something strange here in Argentina, no? But the people, when they see the technical approach, the scientific approach, change his ideas, their ideas. Sorry.
Well, I applaud you in being the first team. That has to be incredibly difficult, because I know just even in our region, I live in central United States in what's considered the Bible Belt. And, you know, over the last 10 years, it's really opened up. But prior to that, we didn't even talk about this kind of thing. Paranormal research, you just didn't talk about. And so now you're in you're the first team in your whole country. And so that's difficult sometimes, because people do maybe look at you a little funny or take you a little funny. And I wondered how difficult it was to start being able to investigate. Do you find that you have a lot of homeowners or residential customers or customers, clients? Or do you find that you're basically doing a lot of historical sites? What kind of investigations are you able to get going there?
Well, for example, the historic locations – are extremely difficult to get here in Argentina. The government does not allow us to investigate in general. For example, we went to the jail of Ushuaia, a very, very creepy place. But the most of the cases are private locations, private homes.
Now, this is one question, Nicholas, I love to ask our TAPS family teams, especially when they're in a different part of the world that, you know, myself and most people probably are not familiar with over here in the States and in Canada. But what is considered probably one of the most famous, most haunted locations in Argentina? If I had one shot to do an investigation, Chris and I and Cormac were coming over to do an investigation together, what's the one place we would have to go and see?
I think the Viena Hotel, the one where was investigated by Ghost Hunter International at season 2, it's the most haunted place here.
And have you had a chance to go there yourself with your team?
We are going to investigate there at October.
Oh, how exciting. And what are some of the stories from that place, some of the more famous haunted residents of that hotel?
The legend tells Hitler was at the hotel. But we know that there's a tragic love story about with the owner, the original owner, and one girl of the area, and there's a lot of history there.
You can't have a haunted hotel without a tragic love story. They just got to go hand in hand. For sure. So, well, Nicholas, do you guys have any big events coming up? I don't know, you know, being the only team over there in Argentina or the first of a two now, that it's probably not like over here in the States where there's so many teams, people put on conventions and talks and events for people to come to. But is there anything like that going on over there in Argentina, something big for your group that you're going to be involved with?
Last year we did a live investigation broadcasted in the internet. But now we are on TV programs or doing notes with newspapers and things like that. No, a live event.
Now, you say you have a live ghost hunt coming on the computer. When is that going to be? And if people want to check it out, will it be on your main webpage?
No. The investigation was last year, at October of the last year.
Oh, okay.
So that event's already happened. Well, we want you to know that, you know, just get a hold of us if you do anything like that in the future where we can view what you're doing. I think we would all just love to see that and just kind of see how your team operates and things like that. I'm really interested to see our overseas teams in action and how they do. I do have a quick question for you from the chat room, if you wouldn't mind, Nicholas, real quick before we cut loose here. The question, the way she stated it, was that in the USA, we seem to notice that a lot of the activity and a lot of the evidence that is picked up is during our colonial time period. And so she's asking, do you notice that you are able to, or that there are more reported claims of seeing, you know, people or apparitions or anything, or more evidence that seems to be gathered or centered around a certain time period or era?
Here in Buenos Aires, there's a place called there's a cemetery called La Recoleta, and there's a place with a lot of history and a lot of claims of apparitions of people from the later 800s. For example, there's a lot of public buildings of 1810 or 1850, and there's too much activity. For example, another interesting thing, the Central Bank of Argentina have a ghost story of slaves of the 100 and the 1810, the year 1810. The ground was at that moment a graveyard for slaves. And there's a lot of claims of apparitions and full body apparitions in the bank.
And that's in a bank building?
Yes. In the in the I don't know the word in English. The down in the vault.
Okay, in the vault of the bank. Sure. Well, that sounds like an interesting place to go. I think, Tim, when we go, we're going to have to pick up that spot.
Okay, I'm in.
Nicholas, we've kind of run out of time. I appreciate so much that you made the time for us this evening so we could talk to you and learn a little bit more about your team. We're so glad to have you in the TAPS family, and it's going to be a joy to get to watch as you continue spreading out this effort in Argentina. Please let us know if there's ever anything we can do for you. And by all means, if you do any more online events, let us know. We'd like to tune in.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm sorry. So sorry for my English. I speak a little of French, a little of English, but just a little.
Hey, I think you did a great job.
You did a great job.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we appreciate you, Nicholas, and we will definitely be in touch.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Nicholas. Wow. How cool. It's just so cool to watch how over the years the TAPS family has grown and literally gone international. And when we find out that the very first team ever started in Argentina as part of the TAPS family, I mean, that's pretty cool stuff.
It is. It's gratifying. We know that we're actually, you know, making progress and doing things. I love to hear when we grab a new international team every time. It's exciting for me.
Absolutely. We, speaking of being excited, are very excited, too, about our guests that are going to be coming up here shortly. We're getting ready to kind of switch gears, and we're still going to stay with the strange and the weird, but we're going to outer space. We're talking UFOs tonight on TAPS Family Radio. We've got Morgan Beal from Florida, or rather from the Arkansas Paranormal Research Associates, and Mindy Hunter from the Southwest Florida Paranormal Investigations. They're also members of TAPS family teams, but apparently they love their UFOs too. We're going to talk MUFON and UFOs coming up in just a bit. We're going to take a quick break. Okay. I need to flip-flop those teams. I just realized I wrote down my notes wrong, so I apologize to Morgan and to Mindy. So Morgan is from Southwest Florida Paranormal Investigations. Gotcha. And Mindy is from Arkansas Paranormal Research Associates. You think I would have figured that out, because after their names in parentheses, I put Morgan, Florida, Mindy, Arkansas. You think, God, I'm sorry.
You know, that's okay. It's, you know.
It happens, right? It happens.
That's right.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, though. When we come back, we're talking UFOs on Jackalope Radio. This is TFR.
You told us you wanted more variety.
All types of music. I love the music.
With less commercials, and we deliver. Jackalope Radio.
The TAPS family is truly international. If you live in the peninsula of Fife on the eastern border of Scotland and feel you may have a haunting, there's help. Scottish Paranormal, a proud TAPS family member, is a scientific-based paranormal research team that is dedicated to the study of the unknown. Helping individuals, families, and business owners over the past 6 years, Scottish Paranormal is ready to help you. Their work is confidential and no charge for service will ever be asked of their clients. If you feel you need the help of Scottish Paranormal, then go to their website at www.scottish-paranormal.com. co.uk.
South Coast Paranormal Tours. Dare to explore the unknown.
South Coast Paranormal Tours invites you to explore the haunted decks of the Star of India. We'll show you the paranormal hotspots, then we turn off the lights and let you be a part of your very own paranormal investigation.
Visit us online at scparanormaltours.com.
South Coast Paranormal Tours. Dare to explore the unknown.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Taps Family Radio. It's a Tuesday evening with TFR. For all of you who are joining us live in our chat room, we thank you for being with us. You can find us at tapsfamilyradio.net, tapsfamilyradio.net. And all you have to do is click on chat and you'll find us in the chat room. However, on the homepage of tapsfamilyradio.net, you will find all of our shows archived, every one of them. So if you listen to us on the archives too, we thank you for supporting us that way, because obviously we couldn't do what we do, which is TFR, without you supporting us and listening. So thanks for being out there. And my name is Tim Ellis, co-host Chris Perkins. Chris, you ready to take this show in a completely different direction we've never gone before?
I'm excited. I am really ready for this. Yes, let's do this.
Me too. Me too. Kind of the stepbrother to ghosts and paranormal. It was definitely the three things that I loved as a kid growing up: ghosts, what we now know as the creatures of Bigfoot and Nessie and all them, cryptozoology and UFOs. All three of them just kind of went hand in hand in hand. And we're so excited to have with us tonight two members of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. And you can find their main page at MUFON.com. And we'll talk more about that coming up in just a bit, because I spent all day, I hope my boss isn't listening, because I spent all day playing on that website today. We would like to welcome to the show tonight Morgan Bell from the Southwest Florida Paranormal Investigations and Mindy Hunter from Arkansas's Paranormal Research Associations. Morgan and Mindy, thank you guys so much for being with us tonight, and let's talk some UFOs. What do you say?
Awesome. Thank you for having us.
Sounds fun. Yeah, so let's do it. MUFON, but you guys are also part of TAP's family teams. What came first, the chicken or the egg? Were you guys MUFON members, or were you paranormal investigators first? Let's go ahead and start with you first, Morgan.
I started out as an SWFPI member about almost 8 years ago. You know, we got into TAP's family. I did have a kind of an interest all the time into UFOs, because I had family members that were in the military and Air Force that had witnessed some things, and it always intrigued me. But I always was, you know, intrigued by the unknown, and I joined a very objective, scientifically oriented research organization here in Southwest Florida, and kind of stuck with him for a long time, and still am with him. I'm not, you know, I used to be the executive director of SWFPI, but I had stepped down because my job at MUFON had become, the priority in my search for the unknown, I guess. So, sure. And I kind of did my deal there, and now I'm part of the STAR team. I'm also a special investigator or leader or region leader for STAR team as well. So for national MUFON. So it's not just a local thing for me now.
And Mindy, how about you? What started first for you? Was it ghosts or UFOs? And how did you get involved with MUFON?
I started with paranormal first. All mine goes back to when I was around 8, and I had my first experience. I saw an apparition. And so I've had this lifelong, you know, love of ghosts, hauntings, Bigfoot, UFOs, you name it. If it was on TV or I could find a book, I had it. I was a little geek kid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I, too, have been doing the paranormal thing for about 8 years. And the more I read, the more I saw what I thought might be some kind of relationship between the two. And just from reading stories and I've spent a lot of time researching the different groups. And so I decided to go into MUFON, too, about 3 years ago. And I've never had a UFO experience, unfortunately.
You just took my question.
Sorry.
That's okay. What I was going to follow that with is, you know, it's great to me to talk to you guys who do both, who do the paranormal research with the ghosts and then who do the UFO bit, because I think there's a lot of similarities in how we do things, and then of course there's a vast difference too. But what I'm wondering is, you know, we've talked a lot, the three of us. These two are very active in TAP's family. They're at our meetings, and they are really involved. And we've talked before about a lot of the hype and the claims that come along, that it's really hard to sometimes dig out, you know, the actual claims or the people who are just maybe interested and fascinated. Do you find that goes along with the UFOs too? That it's hard to weed out the claims that really you need to go after, or do you just kind of have to look at everybody, or what are you finding the climate, I guess, is in the UFO world? Morgan, maybe, you want to?
Oh, okay, yeah. It's almost identical. For instance, the group Anonymous?
Yeah, we were going to bring that up tonight, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we went across our MUFON management bulletin board on our emails, and They're evidently a small contingent within Anonymous that's going to be making up some UFO sightings to make everybody, or to prove to everybody that people that believe in UFOs are idiots. And so I don't know where that came from, but you know, that's what we are always challenged with. People who like faking stuff, you know, just like in our, you know, in the paranormal, we deal with crazy people. So do we. And then I mean really clinical. I mean, in both sides, it's almost identical. I've been on, you know, tons of preliminaries with SWFPI, and I've been on tons of interviews with MUFON, and it seems to be the same sort of thing. You know, every now and then you'll come across the person who just wants attention or you know, has a true mental issue, and you run into that too. So there's a lot of, you know, you have to listen to everybody. I mean, you can't right. just ignore it, or you might miss something really extraordinary. So, you know, yeah, it's same thing.
Well, and one of the reasons I wanted to ask that was, you know, like I was going to ask if you had had your experiences. It seems like everybody has had a ghost experience. But it doesn't seem like I run into as many who will at least admit that they've had a UFO experience. And I didn't know if that's because it's becoming a little bit more almost a fad. You know, we've talked about in the past how it's a fad almost to have had a ghost experience. But it maybe hasn't hit that fashionable fad level yet to admit you've had a UFO experience. So I wasn't quite sure if you get as many claims or how that is, but I know you stay really busy with MUFON, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I'm sure you do, too.
I find that, at least in my case around here, I get a new case about once a month, sometimes more, but I have trouble getting the people, once they submit the report to MUFON's website, when I contact them, I have problems getting them to want to meet and talk and let me further the investigation. Whereas in the paranormal, it seems, I don't know if it's what you were talking about, the stigma, or it's cool, or but with the whole UFO thing, I'm having trouble getting people to actually talk to me. It's like they feel safe submitting an email or submitting the query on the form on MUFON.com. But when it comes down to really sitting down and talking with somebody, I am having a heck of a time getting somebody to actually meet with me.
I find that really interesting, Mindy. And what do you think that is? Do you think it is the fact that they feel safe enough behind an email, but after that, are they frightened, or do you actually think maybe these are people who aren't honest about what they actually saw and thought it'd just be neat to submit something to the site, but then once they realize you guys are really out there and you're going to start to dig deeper, they realize, okay, you know, I'm done joking around. What do you think it is?
Probably a little of both. It may just depend. I have one guy right now that has said he will meet with me, but he says he feels like it's his civic duty, but he admitted he was afraid. I don't know if he thinks, I mean, who knows? He could think somebody's watching him, or I'm not sure why he thought it was. What struck me was he said, I feel like it's my civic duty to report it. So I wonder if he may, I don't know, you get a lot of conspiracy theorists out there on the UFO side, I think worse than you do on the paranormal side. Everybody thinks everything's a government conspiracy, and I've actually
right.
met a lady that swore up and down that it was government related, and they followed her. And I don't know what was wrong with her, but I really, just from the hour or two we spent with her, I really think, bless her heart, that she was real schizophrenic.
Now we got a question here, and Morgan and Mindy, again, you guys, either one of you can answer this, or you both take turns. This is from our chat room at tapsfamilyradio.net. Nick wanted to know that you know, in the field of paranormal investigation, there's obviously specific pieces of equipment we use. Do you find a lot of those pieces of equipment translate over into UFO investigations as well, such as night vision, camcorders, binoculars, etc.
You want to go first, Mindy?
No, you go ahead.
Okay. Absolutely. I mean, I'd say everything minus, you know, some of the ghost meters or some of the customized stuff for ghost hunting. The biggest things in the field for us are evidence collection tools. So a lot of forensic science tools, more so than you would find in paranormal. I mean, I guess, you know, if you come across some ectoplasma or some sort of material oozing out of the walls, you could definitely sample it. And then also when we're doing night watches, see, in UFO research, we have two different types of investigation. One is the site investigation when something has occurred, and we're following up with some sort of forensic science. And then when we're out in the field actively looking for the unknown objects, we have a whole set of different tools, which include the night vision. You know, the Digital Ranger Nikon is a good tool that we use because you can hook it up to a small DVR and you can record HD video off your night vision scope. We have those binoculars, night vision binoculars. Even during the daytime, we do the same things. Now we have these SLR cameras that shoot HD, and you can use those professional grade lenses, telephoto lenses, to capture much better film now than you used to. Again, it's pretty much the same along the lines, I think, just minus some of the things like K2s and vibration meters and stuff like that. However, we have been working actually a lot with groups out of Taft's family. In fact, there was a few cases up in New York and I believe in Delaware. I'm not quite specifically sure, but we actually used a Taft's family group to help with an abduction case because the team there didn't have the equipment necessary to run surveillance for the witnesses, and they offered their help with the DVRs, the sound equipment, all the different types of measuring equipment, so they could actually do stakeouts with MUFON.
Like that. Very cool.
I do too.
Yeah, we're actually thinking of coming up with an official program possibly where we actually create relationships with some of these groups in the areas where we believe that they could definitely help us out with some of these cases, because most of our investigators are all volunteers individually. We don't actually volunteer as a team. However, we work as a team, but most of us are individuals, so we don't really have access to all that type of equipment unless we're already in a TFM or a similar group. So we may be in the future. A lot of times I refer Taft's family groups to help out an investigator that needs help with surveillance. So,
well, you know, that may be something, now that you bring it, you know, out like that, that may be something we consider through Taft's family to somehow notate on our list when people are looking, that, you know, you are also in MUFON, and if they need help with that kind of thing, they can reach you that way as well.
Yep.
That's something I never considered until you said that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I always thought it might be a great idea because, you know, especially within Taft's family, we're such good examples of, groups that operate in the field with all the equipment and understanding of the equipment. Why not? It doesn't hurt. So.
Now, how about on your end, Mindy? Do you find, have you used a lot of the same equipment out in the field for both UFO and paranormal investigating?
I have used some, yes. I even occasionally will take some of my, we've got one person that's got a, what are those called? I can't think what they're called. The things that measure for radioactivity.
Geiger counter.
Geiger counter, yeah. Yep. Oh, I had a blank brain for a minute. Yeah, I use a borrowed one of those sometimes, and which I even think that might be handy to have in some haunting cases. You know, you never know what you're going to find sometimes in these houses.
You got it.
I've used the natural tri-field before, just looking for, you know, different readings that could possibly, you know, mean something, just anything that, I don't know, I investigate both in very similar ways, and I've actually learned a lot from MUFON and incorporated a lot of their methods into the way our group investigates, because they've got some really good ideas.
Well, you know, as far as your methods, and you talked about incorporating things together, when we get a case for a ghost investigation for the paranormal that way, we're contacted by a client. They call us out, and typically it's repeated events. You know, they say, you know, we're being kept up every night, and it's something that we can go in, they can point to an area of the home, we can focus on that. It's got to be very different for what you're doing, because do you find it's typically an event that has already happened and may not happen there again, or do you actually have clients that call and say, this happens every weekday, or this happens every other week? I would think that it has to be very challenging to go in after something has happened to try to substantiate it. So do you get those repeated events, or is it usually just a singular happening?
I think all of the cases that I've had thus far have just been single events. That would be neat to have one that had multiple sightings. That would make you see that there are, that would make me think that maybe there was some kind of pattern, and I'd want to show up whenever that they were seeing the thing, because yeah. I've never seen anything. I'm just dying to.
Yeah, I've had several cases. One in particular, I think I sent you guys that report called 18256. We have them by numbers. That's how we number our cases. That case was a object over Pasco County, Florida, that repeated itself over a 2-year period with several witnesses, including witnesses that MUFON doesn't even have, from other organizations that have reported UFO sightings. So a whole community actually witnessed the UFO over a 2-year period.
Wow.
And we're now still actively working on it with our STAR team. We reactivated them to collect more information, because it's becoming more narrow of a search, because we're starting to figure out where it may have come from or gone to.
Oh, so, interesting. Yeah. That's got to be exciting.
Oh, yeah. It's brilliant.
Was there a definite pattern in that 2-year period? Here I am asking you questions now. I'm interested.
It's like, I don't know anything that goes on in Arkansas, but, you know, I understand. It's a big organization. We have, I think, over 300 or so, or plus cases a month, so come into MUFON. So yeah, it's huge. But yeah, there was a definite pattern. Same exact object. It was filmed by 3 different people over a 2-year period. It was the same object every year, and it you know, the pattern was it stayed still and turned off when it disappeared. It just kind of turned its lights off. You know, it's the same thing. We have nationally, and I have to pay attention to a lot of the cases nationally, because I'm on the STAR team, is that we see a lot of cases with the spheres, the metallic spheres, and those are almost international. Those are repeated everywhere, and they got pictures of them. We have video of them, everything. We even have some older Gulf Breeze videos that showed the actual object sitting very still and then just zipping off extraordinarily fast, but it was a little tiny silver-like sphere. And that picture I sent also, we just had a trace evidence case in southeast Florida, in Miami-Dade, where one of these objects were seen in the backyard, and it was one of these spheres. And the dog, this guy let his dogs out and ran towards it, and the object just shot straight up, and it left some trace evidence of burned grass and everything else. And this is a credible witness. This was a police officer that reported it.
Yeah, that's always got to help the investigation, and I know it does for us too in the ghost field, but especially in UFOs too, when you have folks from police, firemen, the armed forces, when you can get those type of witnesses, that just adds a level of credibility to it, I think, doesn't it?
I think so, yes, definitely.
Yeah,
it definitely is one of the biggest help in our case is credibility. It's forensic science. I mean, it all depends on the witness a lot of times. So, yeah, definitely.
Right. very good. If you're just joining us right now on Taps Family Radio tonight, we're talking a subject matter that we have never touched on before here on TFR. There's a first time for everything, and both Chris and I are very excited about it. UFOs is what we're talking, and we're talking with folks from MUFON. We have got Morgan Bell from the Florida chapter of MUFON and Mindy Hunter from the Arkansas chapter of MUFON. And I'll tell you what, if you go to the website, MUFON, MUFON.com, which stands for Mutual UFO Network, it's a great website. Again, probably spent a little bit too much time on it this afternoon while I was at work, but I just, it's a great website to check out if you are a fan of UFOs and UFO reports and cases. And it's very easy to navigate. One of the first things I saw when I went there was sign up for the MUFON email newsletter. I'm very happy to say I have done that. I will start now receiving the newsletter from MUFON. Anyone can do that. It's free to sign up. Now, what another thing I liked, Morgan and Mindy, on this site is, and it's very cool because it reminds me a lot of TAPS Family website. You can you go to find a chapter, and then you've got a nice big map of the U.S., and you click on whatever state, and it'll let you know who to contact for that state. So very easy to navigate if anyone's looking for information. Let me ask you guys this, because I think, and you guys know both sides of the story here, paranormal and UFO research. On the paranormal side of things, we deal with a lot of, this is my information, I'm not sharing it with you, this is my territory, get off my territory. A lot of arguing, bickering, and backstabbing in the paranormal field. One thing TAPS Family has done has created a unified family out there, a unified group to help work together. But it seems like the UFO field study of UFOs has, you guys have gotten it right from the start. I mean, that's why MUFON is here. It is one big organization that kind of helps run and quarterback UFO research. Why do you think the UFO field got it right and ghosts field got it wrong? What happened?
Oh, we're just better at hiding it.
I'm not sure if that makes me feel better or worse.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's, you know, any big organization, I think we both have similar issues. If you look, and I'm sure Mindy would concur, but we see this all the time locally, with new members or people who think, you know, they want to get out there for the wrong reasons, you know, for their personal reasons, they want to put their name out there, they rather boast and I guess ego their way to the top. And a lot of times it's very true. And it's true just as much in the UFO field that it is in the ghost hunting or paranormal field. It's people being people. So
when
I would think that would probably be right. I haven't had much experience with that because our MUFON groups are so small here. We're lucky to not have drama.
And, you know, maybe that's a good point there, Mindy, because, and I know, Morgan, you touched on this earlier, too. A lot of the teams, and I say the word teams in quotes, in MUFON are actually just, it's a one-person setup. So maybe by that being the case, maybe that's why it's, you know, MUFON has been able to grow as it has, and MUFON is the team where the individual works the area, and maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah, we're individually assigned cases, so it does lead into more independence, kind of like a you know, field investigator would just be by ourselves, but we'd also pull in people to help out with cases. So the person that's assigned the case would be ultimately responsible for the case. So there's always somebody that's lead on a case. So it makes it easy for everybody.
Very good. Go ahead, Mindy.
No, I said that's true. I didn't think of it that way, but that's very true.
Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break. We have one more commercial break to take here this evening. We are speaking with Morgan Bell from the Southwest Florida Paranormal Investigations, which is a TAPS Family team, and Mindy Hunter from the Arkansas Paranormal Research Associations. However, both are members of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, in their particular states. We're talking UFOs tonight on TAPS Family Radio. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more with MUFON here on TFR.
When you hear strange noises in the night, When unexplained shadows move through the halls. When you feel there's nowhere you can turn. We're here to help. The Southern Paranormal and Anomaly Research Society. We're a proud TAPS family member with chapters in Mississippi, Georgia, and South Carolina. Our dedicated team of investigators is ready to assist you. With professionalism and the utmost discretion, we'll help you understand what you've been experiencing. The Southern Paranormal and Anomaly Research Society. Because at times like this, you don't simply need proof. You need answers. For more information, visit us on the web at www.spars-paranormal.com.
When you need to know what goes bump in the night, contact the Wausau Paranormal Research Society, serving the entire state of Wisconsin. Investigations are free of charge and completely confidential. You'll receive objective, scientific analysis of the activity in your home. The goal is to provide you with a rational explanation for what you're seeing or hearing. The Wausau Paranormal Research Society, where the paranormal and reality meet. To schedule an investigation, visit WPRS.net.
And welcome back to TAPS Family Radio. Tim Ellis with you, along with co-host Chris Perkins, tonight on TFR. Again, if you want to join us live in our chat room, come on over. TAPSFamilyRadio.net is the webpage. You should have it bookmarked by now anyway, but if not, do so. And then just click on chat and you can come on into our chat room. It's a great way for you to ask questions live to our guests this evening here on TFR, which, by the way, are Morgan Bell and Mindy Hunter. Morgan Bell is a member of MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, for the state of Florida, and Mindy is also a MUFON member for the state of Arkansas. And Chris, I know you had a couple questions for me.
I do. My first question is kind of about teams that want to join MUFON. I know, as you know, TAPS Family Manager, we get the applications, we look them over. If there's a need in the area, then we interview and we have this whole process. And I was wondering, first of all, what kind of qualifications a team has to meet before they can join MUFON, and once they are approved and inside, you know, the program and in the network of teams, is there any certain training they go through? So it's kind of a two-part question. Morgan,
You want me to go first? It's like, you know, and like I said, MUFON, the difference is individuals. So each individual would apply to become a field investigator. You can become, anybody can be a member, everybody. And what they do is you have to apply to get the manual, the MUFON manual, and you get it in the mail, and it's just, you know, good size book. And when you go through the book, you have to, there's a test at the end. There's a take-home test, so to speak. That you have to send back in. And the take-home test, just because it's take-home, is not easy. So it's not too bad, but at least it makes sure that the person goes through enough to teach themselves about the aspects about MUFON. And so the rest of it comes from the state and individuals being trained by the officers within those states, state directors, chief investigators, section directors, and it just comes with experience. And we're all volunteers. So, again, it's a little bit easier because we're dealing with individuals and rather than whole teams. I don't know how that would work in the ghost world. I guess it would work if you did individuals. But, you know, it tends to for UFOs, it's more of a one-on-one until a, you know, big trace evidence case or something comes along. So hopefully that answers. Did I miss anything, Mindy?
Well, I was just going to say, I think we might have a lot fewer ghost hunters out there if they had to take that 100-question test, because like he said, it's not easy. It was very time-consuming, and I was 100% sure I got every question right, and I didn't, and I was so devastated that I didn't make 100.
Oh, no. It took that hard, huh?
You know, I
It was.
I, I think that is great, though, that MUFON has that. I mean, it, with the reputation that MUFON has, there's nothing wrong with setting a process to get involved. And again, I think this kind of goes back to what, you know, kudos to TAPS and what they're creating with the TAPS family and what Chris is running as the TAPS family manager. I mean, TAPS family has created this MUFON kind of organization, but within TAPS, and not anyone can just be a TAPS family. You actually have to go through a application process, and there's nothing wrong with setting standards if you're going to have people out there representing who you are and what you stand for.
Absolutely.
Now, Morgan, you mentioned earlier, and Mindy also, that you said that your position with MUFON, is there a certain title you have within MUFON aside from what you do as a field investigator, or is that your position, field investigator?
Mindy or Morgan?
Either of you, both of you.
Go ahead, Mindy.
I am a field investigator at this point. I'm sort of the Central Arkansas Section Director's Assistant. Like I said, we're very small. Our Central Arkansas section has like 4 people in it, so we're very small. And I'm trying to get our word out so we can maybe grow this section bigger. Right now, Fayetteville and Fort Smith, I think, are kicking our butt as far as membership. So, I've been working on that, but I don't have really official title other than field investigator.
I have too many titles. I don't even follow them. They tend to just blur. But I started out in MUFON as a field investigator. I quickly became the state section director for Southwest Florida. So I organized members and non-members alike for meetings, monthly meetings, symposiums. We talk about evidence. I was put into the STAR team as a field investigator, which is kind of like, I guess if you were to compare it, it would be like the home team TAPS. Not that they're better than everybody else, but in this case, the STAR team is where they take all the best within MUFON nationally and internationally. And they utilize not only their experience in MUFON, but their professional backgrounds to, you know, justify them being on the STAR team. And they're kind of like their special unit. So I was put into that. It used to be funded. It's not funded anymore. It's a different project now. So that's where it led me into becoming part of HQ or headquarters. So I've become not only a special investigator, special projects. I'm working on a special project called Project Bravo. Which has a real name, but we're going to be releasing it in June. But it's a really big project dealing with something very new for the UFO community worldwide. It's just going to blow everybody away. It's going to be great. So I work on
special... Do I want to know?
Everybody's like, no, you told us. Well, if you go on to Florida MUFON's YouTube, you can look up Project Bravo HD in YouTube, and it'll show up. And it's a little teaser. It really doesn't tell you much, but we'll be coming out with more later. But then also, I'm the national recruiter for STAR Team, and so I'm involved in a lot in HQ. Not only just locally here in Florida, but I'm mainly part of the national branch of MUFON.
Well, gee, Morgan, I don't get it. Why was it again that you couldn't be the director in Southwest Florida? Sounds like you have a ton of free time.
I still have all those wonderful responsibilities, but I just love doing this. It's great. It's my passion, and I'm really hopefully the projects that I work on will really push the whole subject of UFOs forward into the future. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, I think everything you just said about the different projects and the structure and everything just attributes to the fact that MUFON is organized. And you know, people sometimes don't know that. I don't believe I'd ever really heard of MUFON until Morgan, we met. And you were describing to me, I had heard of them, but didn't really understand what MUFON was. And I don't think that a lot of people do. And I can appreciate the structure and the just what's behind this organization, the history. history of it. I was looking over the website, too. I didn't spend all day, Tim. But I was looking at the website, and I was just so impressed. And I encourage anybody that's listening to go ahead and take a look at that, because it gives some real validity behind what you're doing to those people who still think this is just, you know, a big joke or hokey stuff. You're taking it seriously. You're putting real thought into it. This is an organization that should be taken seriously. And to that note, I do have a question from chat, and it's actually from Larry Moore. He is our booking and promotions guy for the show that you've both kind of talked with him getting ready for this show. And he wanted to know, he said, what do you think, both of you think, can be done to raise the awareness and interest in not only UFO research, but MUFON specifically, due to so many movies out there and the media making it out to seem kind of silly, or maybe even some government project, you know, all those conspiracy theories and things like that. So what do you think we can do, or what can be done to kind of raise that awareness?
Want to go first, Marie?
I was just sitting here thinking about that. That's kind of what we've been trying to work on. You know, getting the word out, letting people know that, you know, this is serious. It's not some silly movie like Signs or something. Not that Signs wasn't good, but you know that this stuff is real. People are impacted by it. People need help, just like in ghosts and hauntings. And
yeah, it's
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a serious subject. You know, I've sat down with retired Air Force pilots where they're in tears talking about what happened to them. You know, there's several examples where I can give you where it's a very serious subject. And, you know, it impacts people for life when they have these experiences. And so a lot of what people can do is, you know, go to the site, get involved, read into these, you know, into the cases. Don't take everything the media throws out there. I mean, like the case in the Phoenix Lights, I'm sure everybody's heard of. People really don't know the real story because they've only heard what the media tells them. And it's really, the real story is far more extraordinary than what the media has been throwing out there. So there's a lot of unintentional fogging of the actual cases. A lot of it's just because of ratings issues and you know, Hollywood wants to make their own version of the truth. You know, just like in the, what's that movie called?
Fire in the Sky.
Yeah, Fire in the Sky. Perfect example. And that's in your, near you guys.
Yeah.
You know, his story was taken by a producer and he worked with him. And then all of a sudden they changed the story on him. And it's not what happened. And, you know, he comes out later and the story is actually more interesting than what they put on the movie. So it's just, that's the way we're treated as something like a giggle factor because of Hollywood, because of how the picture of the little green men has been painted for our entire history, that really nobody really realizes how serious and how profound the subject matter actually is. And it's really, when I got into it, you know, I thought the same thing. I was in here to see something cool. I was going to research this stuff. I've always seen this stuff on X-Files, but when I really realized how serious and scary in some cases it is, it kind of still to this day still blows me away. I mean, some of the stuff that I see, like the Fourth Kind is a good example of a really bad example of what actually goes on. In fact, Bud Hopkins, which is one of the leading researchers in the abduction experience, said in comments that it had little to do with reality. I mean, he's interviewed over thousands of individuals, and Fourth Kind is more or less like a Blair Witch Project. It's not real. It was totally fabricated.
And you just told me there was no Santa Claus, Morgan, because that was my next question for you. Because I got to tell you, I loved that movie, and here's why. I'm a fan of horror films or scary movies, and I probably just approached it at that angle as a fan of good scary movies.
Sure.
That movie just creeped the heck out of me.
Oh, and, I got
yeah, and I wanted to believe that maybe Hollywood finally got it right and told the correct story. I should have not been surprised when I started reading more about it online and really starting to figure out what this was all about that it didn't. But I wanted to get your guys' take on The Fourth Kind. Was there any credibility to that film at all?
Not at all. In fact, the investigators in Alaska, there was a few that were up there, were so surprised. They started looking at it, and they couldn't find any information. So it was kind of like a mad dash to find the truth about it, and no one could find anything. And they eventually, you know, kind of cornered the producers, and not MUFON, but people in general, in interviews, and they really kind of bumbled a lot, and they couldn't answer anything. So it is what it is. It happens, and really they don't owe us anything. They don't have to tell anybody the truth, and that's wrong, but it's the way Hollywood operates.
Yeah, you know, and the field of paranormal research has the same obvious stigma of being in Hollywood. You know, let's just take a storyline and completely, you know, bastardize it. And the perfect example for that on the ghost side of things is the movie A Haunting in Connecticut.
I was just thinking that same title.
Yeah, the theatrical version of it was ridiculous. I mean, yeah, the actual story. Yeah,
you asked John Zappas. He said, hey buddy, did all those bodies really fall out of the wall? I don't quite remember it happening that way.
And that's what I don't understand, because the true story, the actual story that A Haunting in Connecticut is based on, is so much better than what Hollywood produced.
I know. It was scarier, too.
Yes.
I don't get it.
Yep. Exactly.
Actually, I've got a little tidbit. Travis Walton, I interviewed him a few months back.
And that's the main guy from A Fire in the Sky, right?
Yes,
that's the guy from Fire in the Sky. And I've always believed him. He just always seemed really believable. And super nice guy, too. But he told me that he actually was talking to some producers right now about doing another movie, but doing it correctly with the real story. And I kind of hope he does.
That would be great. That would be fantastic.
Well, I have a question from chat real quick, if I can pop in with that. This question comes from Annabelle, and I wanted to kind of get this in. I think it's an interesting question. She says, do either one of you think that what most people think is an intelligent haunt is actually another life force, maybe alien life form, trying to communicate with us? Could these fields be mixed?
I
think it's possible.
I mean, it would definitely make sense that if they're using some way of trying to reach us, maybe through EM fields or something like that, that it could be confused with an intelligent haunt. Morgan, have you ever given that some thought?
Absolutely. We've had a case in Florida that involved something like that, where the individual was having abduction experiences, but then he would notice something very, you know, get that eerie feeling like he's being watched. Credible witness. We looked into it, and B cases end up having, you know, these experiences where these beings are either walking through a wall or disappearing altogether into thin air. So, I mean, again, all hypothetical, but if you come across an advanced, you know, civilization that can do anything, including mind control and cloaking or whatever you want to call it, sure. I mean, what's stopping them from being in a room and you not even knowing it, and then you getting these similar readings that you would get, you know, like you would sit there with an EMF detector or a vibration detector and you would get something, but there shouldn't be anybody in there. What is that? You know, and there's been a lot of cases. There was one case, and I cannot remember the city, where this guy was just walking right down a street, you know, where they have these little shops, a little town, and this small sphere just pops up out of nowhere right in front of him, and, you know, like it came unglued out of, you know, like predator vision, it came out of its little cloaking phase, and he approached it, it backed up and disappeared, and then it reappeared, and you know, it came back again as he approached it, it disappeared and zipped off and just disappeared, it was never there. So what are the, what's the tech being used here? Is there some sort of cloaking? Well, who knows? And, you know, these people who are being observed, like we're safari animals or whatever, very well could be in the room with you, and we could be doing a ghost investigation because that's what they think is going on, because it's like poltergeist activity. Who knows?
Why is that more unsettling to me for some reason than the ghost thing? That, yeah.
Yeah.
That gets me.
I heard you say, and I found that was interesting because that's what I've always called it too. And I find that a lot in some of our haunting cases where people will say, I just saw movement, or I can't explain what I saw, but I saw something move. And I always say, was it kind of like Predator in the movie? And they'll go, yes. And, you know, you just got to wonder.
Yeah, you do. It's even the craft that people observe have done similar things. We had a guy out in Newport Richey, just north of Tampa, observed this, and this huge triangle-like shape just come up. It looked like it came out of the water, and it just kind of coasted over land, but it was like predator vision. He said if you were right underneath it, you would never see it. And but he was looking at it from the side because he was way up on the shoreline. And just odd. And we've had, you know, I know there was a case that they looked at on that show, what is it?
Factor Faith,
yeah. That was in North Florida where the guy claims to have aliens in his house, you know. And he's not, and the thing is his case seems a little crazy, but the problem is we're always getting cases like that, and they're all very similar. And we start to second guess ourselves when we judge people for being, you know, a little bit out there. And because we see this constant, just constant repeat of the same details, the same descriptions, this shadowy figure, or you know, same thing, and it comes right back to it. Are shadow people ghosts, or are they aliens, or are they some sort of being from another dimension? Who knows?
D, all of the above.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, if I could just put, I know this is kind of like, you know, hanging out with a doctor at a party and then asking him about your tennis elbow or something, but if I could just put a scenario in front of to me to see if you've ever, this was unique for me. I know in the paranormal world, you know, as far as ghosts, we're always, or not always, but we're often talking about children and how they seem to be very open to things. But one thing that I've never heard relayed to me in the ghost end of this is about unborn babies later recalling experiences. And what story was told to me, and it was told to me by someone I consider very credible, is they had an experience driving in their car when his wife was pregnant. And it's an experience that they genuinely feel was a UFO experience. And they even had missing time in the whole thing. And then when this baby that she was pregnant with was 18 months old and not really even speaking well, turned to mom and said, "Mom, I hated that face. I really hated that face." And she said, "What face?" And he said, "When I was in your tummy, that alien face." And
wow.
She completely wigged out, you know, and I would have too. So, I mean, we think, you know, children are just so open and, you know, he could have been just talking, but it was very coincidental. So have you ever heard of anything like that?
I know I've heard a lot about, we've had the pattern of abductions that occurred in the 80s and the 70s primarily dealing with reproduction, where these people would be taken and put, you know, made pregnant, and the babies then were taken away. And we've had a lot of documentation of that occurring in the past, and it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I don't know. That's not enough to go off of. It's a good, you know, because it is a kid, and they, you know, they had another experience, but still, it's right along those lines where we've been hearing the same thing from other witnesses that occurred, you know, in the past. That, like, I even have a chief investigator who had a similar experience, and that's why they got into MUFON. And, you know, she was pregnant at one time, and then one day she wasn't. And no recollection, nothing. They couldn't figure out what happened. The doctors couldn't figure it out either because it wasn't taken out. There weren't scar tissue. There wasn't anything that they could find.
Wow.
So there's been a lot of that in the past. So, and I know if you look at Bud Hopkins, if you read any of his documentary books on the subject, you'll see that same pattern. Scary.
Yeah, I have never heard of anything like that. I have read a few cases. I haven't had any myself, but I know a few people that have cases that involve children, and I wondered if it might be the same thing, like maybe they're more open, like the whole, you know, paranormal theory. But wow, in the womb.
Yeah, that's disturbing. I'll tell you what, when you actually get down to stories like that, that's where, to me, the UFO field gets as personal and scary as ghosts in the paranormal do. And one of the things that I always think about where, and this kind of goes back to two questions ago where we were talking about where could paranormal entities possibly be aliens, is the old hag theory. Which yeah, I have heard quite often some people say. Yeah, exactly.
Old interpretations of something that they just didn't have an explanation for. Same thing as angels, same thing as the wheel, the great wheel, of light, same thing as the burning bush. you could come up with a million examples in history that people interpreted something that we may have a completely different interpretation of today. So it's so true.
Well, what a fascinating, fascinating subject matter. We've been speaking with Morgan Bell out of the MUFON Florida chapter and Mindy Hunter from the Arkansas MUFON chapter. But we're also very proud of the fact, too, that both Morgan and Mindy are part of TAPS family paranormal research teams in their states as well. And something that you guys had touched on earlier in the show, which I know Chris and I were very excited to hear, is kind of the reaching across the aisle and how possible MUFON organizations working with some TAPS family paranormal teams too, and that's exciting. Hopefully, we'll see more of that in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Well, Morgan and Mindy, thank you two so much for taking time to be with us here tonight. You were the first. We've never talked UFOs on TFR, so this was a first, and we had a blast. Thanks, guys, for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Always again. I'll always come back if you guys need it.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have you back
because
this is a great subject matter. Yep. Wonderful. Keep up the great work out there, guys.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. There we go. Morgan Bell and Mindy Hunter from MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. And again, go to www.mufon.com and check out their official website. And then when you go to the area where you can click on a map, let me just pull it up here real quick. It's called Find a Chapter. You click on that. You click on the state you want to find out about your chapter at. And once you click on that state, they've got their own personal page and website too. So MUFON is a well run organization for the UFO field for sure. Had a blast.
That was wow. Let's have them back.
Let's do it. All right. We'll do it for sure. We are ready now for mailbag. It's mailbag time here. Now, real quick, Chris, if anyone for future shows has any questions for us, and again, we're open to answering anything that is not personal, but we're open to answering any type of question. So if people ever want to send in a question for mailbag section, where can they send that to?
They can send that to tfradiochris@gmail.com.
Oh, one more time?
tfradiochris, that's KRIS@gmail.com.
Easy enough. There you go. And what do we have for mailbag tonight?
Well, I thought this question was interesting. We were asked a lot of questions, actually, or at least I am. I'm sure you are, too, about teams that are starting up and how they should be structured. And this question says, how many members do you think should be in a team? How many is too many or not enough?
Mm-hmm. Very good question. I think if you were to take each team within the TAPS family and look at them, I think everyone would have a different answer for you, because I know some TAPS family teams that are huge and then other teams that are quite small. Me personally, I prefer the small team approach. We are 9 members large. We do have a few auxiliary members that work for us, more for historical research, psychological evaluation, certified psychologists on our team. They don't actually go into the field to investigate, but they do work for us pre and post investigations. But the main team itself, we are 9 members, and I have no intentions of wanting to get our team any bigger than that. I like having a small, close group.
You know, I kind of agree with you on that. For me personally, I prefer, you know, the manageable size. But I think it, like you said, it depends on the team. Some teams structure themselves so that they can do 3 investigations a weekend. And to do that, you're going to need quite a team because those same people can't review evidence for all 3 investigations. And so,
great point.
If you have an A team, a B team, a C team, and you can assign cases to all 3, it's a management issue I don't want to deal with. I don't want to have to do all of that. But I also know that, you know, if you have too large of a team, and this is something new teams need to consider, they get excited and they want to bring everybody in. Mm-hmm. A lot of these are residentials, and you're talking 3-bedroom homes. And if right. you have 20, 25 members on your team, you're going to have frustrated people who don't get to investigate often because you can't take 25 people into a 3-bedroom home and effectively run an investigation. So, you know, they need to consider how they want to run their team when they're choosing that. So,
yep, that's a great point. And I think the bigger cities, you're right, will need the just a word to the wise, though. And this is why I've always tried to stay away from the big teams. And it was exactly what you said. If people are getting disgruntled, they don't feel like they're being used or get enough action. I've seen so many incidences where these people get upset, break off, start their own team, and then before you know it, that's where the gang war starts. This is my turf. Get off. And it's ridiculous.
Absolutely. I know exactly what you mean there. Yeah. Well, we do have another question, and okay. this is you know, kind of a basic question, but you know, as this field grows and as more things come out, to be more, I guess more questions are asked. She wants to know exactly what paranormal means. What does that encompass? What is the umbrella of the paranormal? You know, tonight we included definitely UFO research. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, we tend to get our tunnel vision and think paranormal is ghost hunting.
That's a good point. It's not. Yeah.
It's.
Yeah. For me personally, I this is just kind of the way, I'm not saying I have the right answer. This is just the way I approach it, and I have my team approach it. And this is the way I explain it in presentations that I give. If once we have sat down and if we can rule out everything possibly humanly known to write off whatever this, you know, this experience was, once we have eliminated anything that we know that humans can do that is natural cause, once all that is ruled out, then I call it paranormal. That's just the way I approach it. I'm not saying I have the right answer.
I agree with you on that. I just think it's such a broad umbrella, really. Anything we don't – well, you know, Jason used to say anything that's above the normal, I think is how he used to say it, or outside normal. But who defines normal? You know, really, who does?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. You know, and that's another word too, another word that I've always kind of – has been so big and broad. And I think, you know, they – got to be kind of around meaning the same thing, but you know, paranormal, what does it really mean? And the word supernatural, I think the two of them together are kind of the same, kind of lead us in the same direction of, well, what does that really mean? What does supernatural really mean? You know, same with paranormal.
I agree with you on that. How can we define it really?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, who are we to say we've got the right answer? And, you know, if I could pull up Webster Dictionary right now, who knows what they would say if they'd even have an actual definition for paranormal. I don't know. Right. I've never even looked at it, to tell you the truth.
I haven't either. Maybe we should do that. We should have done that first.
That would mean we would prep. We don't prep.
Oh,
we don't
yeah.
prep. No, I take that back. We actually do a lot of prepping, mostly thanks to Larry.
Larry and Cormac.
Booking and promoting in Cormac.
Yeah. Boy, don't they make us look good.
They do. They do. And it's a good thing we got them on our team. If you are just tuning in right now, we're sorry you've missed most of the show. Tim Ellis and Chris Perkins with you. Another live show for Taps Family Radio on of course, Jackalope Radio, our new home. Now, we've been promoting tonight, Chris, our website for Taps Family Radio, which is tapsfamilyradio.net, and relatively a new website. We're very excited to have it. And again, it's got our chat room in there, and it's also got all of our archived shows. If you've missed any of our shows, you can go back there and listen to them anytime you want. However, we've got another website we want to talk about here tonight.
We do. I'm so excited about this. One of the things that we took on about a year ago, actually, when I took the position as TAPS Family Manager, is to bring back a website for the TAPS family. You know, we take for granted that everybody knows what TAPS Family is, and the general public really probably does not. And so we thought a web presence was important. It took a while. We had to find the right people in the right places, and everything had to come together, but we've got it now. We have our TAPS Family website back. It's up and running. To find that, people just need to go to the main TAPS website. It's the AtlanticParanormalSociety.com. Probably the easiest way to get it is to click the I Need Help that comes up in the upper left of the website. Or you can scroll down the left, and there's a TAPS Family section that says TAPS Family website. You can click that, and it'll take you to our new, wonderful TAPS Family website.
Yay!
Now, the website was built from scratch by two of our TAPS Family members, Adam Cannon from Scientific Paranormal in Syracuse, New York, and Jason Steelman from Maine Paranormal, obviously in Maine. Some of the really cool features about it, a map that you mentioned earlier that is similar to MUFON's map. Mm-hmm. It's a coverage map. Anybody who feels like they may have something going on in their home or just needs to contact a local team can go to our coverage map on that website, put in their address, select the mileage range around that address that they want to search, anywhere from 5 miles to 800 miles, and click that search and find all the teams in their area. It brings up their information, the website for that team, and then they can contact that team directly, knowing that they're contacting a TAPS family team to come help them.
I think that is so useful for people out there. If you are listening right now, whether live or on the podcast, and you've been wanting to figure out who could help you in your area, I mean, this is the best way to do it. Go through the TAPS Family brand new website and go to the state. And like you said, Chris, I think it's so important to make sure that people are getting a TAPS Family team, you know. Right. Because like I said earlier, you know, one of the things that is so cool what MUFON does, and one of the things I've always respected that TAPS has done, is there is a process to become a TAPS Family team. And I think that is great. It's been quite a few years since I've had to do it, since our team has had to do it. So I'm not sure if, things have changed since we became a TAPS family team. But, I think that's great that you guys still uphold that.
Well, you know, things have changed a little bit. We're always fine tuning. I know we extended the experience, the length of time a team had to be together. Mm-hmm. But, you know, anybody who wants that information as well, all of that is on the snazzy new website. If they will go to the website, go to TFM Desks. There's a manager's desk that has a little information about Jeff and myself, a help desk, a recruitment desk. And that's where teams who would like to join TAPS Family need to go, to that recruitment desk. When they get to that recruitment desk, they'll be able to see the application to join, whether it be international or, you know, United States teams. They'll be able to look at the membership requirements, the minimum requirements. They'll be able to see exactly who they need to contact for more information on becoming a TAPS Family team. And, you know, not only for prospective teams, but people who are curious about what it means to be a TAPS family member as far as making that qualification, they can look at this and see what we expect minimally from our teams. We're very aggressive when we interview. We are very selective, and sometimes people don't take that too well.
Mm-hmm.
But we feel like we need to be if we're sending people into homes, you know, under that TAPS name. So.
Yep, exactly. Here's something that I want to make sure. We've only got 4 minutes left here before we have to sign off. We're very excited about this. You always hear us talk about him, Cormac Strain. He is our producer. This man is phenomenal, what he can do behind the scenes to keep our show up and running. He has authored a book. And I am so excited to get my hands on this. I'm hoping I can, you know, maybe through through contacts and people knowing people, I can get an autograph copy. I'm hoping.
Oh, yeah, me too. My birthday is coming up, by the way. Hint, hint.
Hint, hint, know. Cormac. Yeah. Cormac is from the beautiful island of Ireland, and he has written, co-authored, actually, with Danny Carthy, Haunted Carlo. And, of course, it is a collection of ghost stories from their beautiful area of the world, and it actually is officially being put on sale June 11th during the Carlo Arts Festival, and he has been a guest here on TFR. Parapsychologist Dr. Kieran O'Keefe is going to be the man who is launching the sale of this book for them. How cool is that?
It was kind of fun to see them go through this process, and now to know that their book is ready to hit the market is so exciting. I can't wait. I'm like you, and I'm serious. You know, he just said that for a fee we could get the autograph. You know, we
really,
yeah. He's like, wow,
I thought we had connections.
I did too. We'll have to hit Danny up. I bet we can get one from him.
There we go. We'll go the other way. Now Cormac, real quick, bud. He's practicing for when he becomes famous. I like that. Once this goes on sale on the 11th, will this be available on like Amazon.com? For us folks over here in on the other side of the globe? All right, perfect. Amazon.com, you will be able to get his their new book. So if you've always wanted to hear about Haunted Carlo, and the foreword, by the way, is also by Dr. Kieran O'Keefe. So I am looking forward to this. Cormac Strain, Danny Carthy, foreword by Dr. Kieran O'Keefe. Haunted Carlo being released on June 11th. That's exciting stuff. Yeah. Chris. Oh, by the way, hauntedcarlo.com, hauntedcarlo.com if you want to actually read up more on the book. Who do we got in 2 weeks?
We have author and TAPS family member, Diana Kelly Syed, I believe is how you say her name. She is a noted author. She is also one of, if not the only, known Muslim paranormal investigator in the United States.
Oh, my.
Which I think gives her a really unique insight, into culturally, how things are different. She has been working very, very hard on a book that is coming out very soon, if it's not already out, that I actually helped her do interviews for the book. So I have to throw myself out there. But the book that I don't have the title handy right now, but what it does is study the culture of paranormal research and the fad and the craze that has started in this country about paranormal investigating. And I think it's an exciting book. She is wildly intelligent. I thoroughly enjoy talking to her. I guarantee you this will be an interesting interview.
I'm looking forward to that. That's 2 weeks from now, right here on Jackalope Radio. Well, thank you once again for everyone for joining us here tonight. TAPS Family Radio, 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. And we will be back in 2 weeks with our next live show. But you will find us every week here on Jackalope Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. On behalf of Chris Perkins and myself, Tim Ellis, thanks for listening to TFR. Good night.
You've been listening to TAPS Family Radio, the safest place in the paranormal world. Join us every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, 4 Mountain, and 3 Pacific on the new home for TAPS Family Radio, Jackalope Radio.